The reading is on page 814 in the Bibles. It's Matthew 9:35, just towards the bottom of the page. And Jesus went throughout all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom and healing every disease and every affliction. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray earnestly to the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest."
Thanks, Bryony, and welcome again if you joined us since the beginning of our meeting. My name's Kev, I'm the minister of the church. Before mobile phones or even emails existed, students had to actually write handwritten letters home to the family to tell them how they were doing. I don't know if any of you remember those days. Very quaint. Here's a letter from a real student. It's an extract. It's not me, just to clarify, but this is a real letter from a student home. "Dear Mum and Dad, sorry I've not written before now. It's been a busy few weeks. First, our halls of residence caught fire, and I had to escape by jumping from a third-story bedroom window. Please don't worry, I think I was lucky to escape with just two broken legs. I was looked after very well in the local hospital. Team of great nurses. One nurse in particular, actually. And dear Mum and Dad, to cut a long story short, last Saturday that nurse and I got married. I'm sure it'll work out. I think our friends are wrong to be alarmed at the difference in our age, language and interests. I think we'll be very happy. And dear Mum and Dad, please don't be alarmed by anything I've just told you, because none of it is actually true. The truth is, I've just failed my first term's exams, and I want you to keep this in perspective." Well, it's a good one, Elizabeth. I think it's a good tip to share with some of the students. They might need this. You can only use it once. But our Bible reading today is about perspective, seeing things in perspective, seeing people in the perspective that Jesus sees them from. He told Matthew and the others to go and make disciples of all nations. Matthew has written his gospel to disciple us. And disciple means to teach, to mentor. Well, what could be better for your life than being mentored in the ways of the Lord of all? Matthew divides his material very carefully into these blocks of Jesus' teaching, surrounded by narrative retelling of the Christ in action. Chapters 8 to 9, since Christmas, we've been in this narrative section. And now 9 verse 35 is a turning point. We're moving from the narrative of 8 to 9 to more of Jesus' teaching concentrated in chapter 10. And today's discipleship training is, well, it's eyesight training. Jesus wants to train us in the perspective that he has when he sees people. When he saw the crowds, I wonder, what do you see when you see the crowds? Jesus has an expansive vision for the crowds, the nations. He wants his disciples to share this vision. You may have noticed there's an outward momentum even in these few verses. He went, all cities, crowds, sent out into. If we want to be obedient disciples, and I hope we do, if we want to be a disciple-making church, and I really hope we do, then it's vitally important, this passage, in envisioning us with Jesus' line of vision. And his strategy, which in some ways has surprised me, where this lands, not precisely the form of missionary activism I was expecting. First, the story so far, verse 35. Jesus went throughout all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom and healing every disease and every affliction. Now, we know all about that from the details of the last two chapters. Teaching things like repent. I've come not to call the righteous, but sinners. There's a challenge in his teaching if you're a sinner, which we all are. But brilliantly also, we've seen proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom, a kingdom of heaven that's very different from the kingdoms of this world. A kingdom of mercy for sinners. A kingdom of being comforted. A kingdom where one day you will see God and the dark shadow of death will be rolled away forever. Jesus is the bridegroom of the kingdom. And in his ministry of teaching, proclaiming, and in that context, healing every affliction, it's like the kingdom of heaven has broken in early with these foretastes of the future. Jesus' healings, they're a bit like the first signs of spring. I was chatting to a couple of you at midweek on Tuesday night about the British weather, our favourite subject. Early February now. You know, you just start to see the signs, don't you? An evening where the sun shines and stays out a little bit longer, weather slightly warm. Even this building feels a little bit warmer today, doesn't it? Don't be fooled, though. We'll have ice and snow again before February's done. Just the first signs, though, of better days ahead. Well, in Jesus' ministry throughout all Galilee, it was as if heaven had come early on the earth. First signs of a better future. And what a moment to be alive in that place at that time as the Lord emptied the hospitals and the GP waiting rooms, banished the oppressive influence of evil, even raised the dead. That little girl last week, were you here? What a moving encounter. That's why the crowds up in verse 33 marveled. No one's ever seen anything like this. I was going to say Jesus going round the place interrupting the created order, but that's the wrong way round. He's going around restoring the way things were originally designed to be, will be again one day. Do you want to know what the kingdom of heaven is going to be like? Reread Matthew 8 and 9. He's not just raw power, though. And as we move into our second point already, that's good going, eh? We're confronted with the thing about Jesus, the sight perspective of Jesus that's going to keep driving his mission outwards to the lost in the nations, to people like us. It's what Jesus sees when he sees the crowds. Verse 36, when he saw the crowds. It's quite a London scene, really, isn't it? I don't know how you are with the crowds. Crowds is the language of the underground. Do you ever venture down there to the world of armpits and smelly food? The crowds, it's round here overground. You don't have to go underground. You know, at this side of the church on the street, there's all these concrete blocks. I don't know if you noticed them. They're expanding the pavements. Sorry, cyclists and drivers. Because you can barely get a space to walk down the pavement here during the working week. Especially with all those people. You know those mini suitcases? Why do you need to take a suitcase to work? They're so annoying. They take up so much pavement space. Sorry if you're one of those suitcase users. Crowds can be annoying. Well, how are you in a crowd? How do you feel about the London crowds? Annoyed, judgmental, indifferent. How does Jesus feel? Verse 36, again, when he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them. Literally, he felt it in the pit of his stomach. We see, I'm gutted. Jesus sees the crowds, and he's gutted for them. Why is he gutted? Because of what he sees. Verse 36 again. Compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. Sheep without a shepherd. That's not a very London scene. This is a painting by a guy called William Holman Hunt. And you can see in the background the sheep without a shepherd because the shepherd's too preoccupied with the girl. There's one upside down there on the left-hand side. Just behind that, you might be able to see two of the sheep are fighting. Another on the back right, about to get lost in the woods, and looking like he's going to take some others off astray with him. Harassed. Also translated weary, beaten down, troubled, helpless. The word means thrown down, confused. And that was the crowds that we met in chapters 8 and 9, wasn't it? Clueless, illness, fear, desperation, steeped in sin. I mentioned sin because it's right. We see this as more than physical helplessness. It's a spiritual issue that Jesus sees. Sheep without a shepherd is a reference to the spiritual leaders of the flock of God, the failed leaders of the flock of God, who'd left his people unfed, directionless, and in terrible danger. Like back in the Old Testament, you might have heard Ezekiel 34, that famous chapter is a diatribe against the failed leaders back then. Actually, the Holman Hunt picture that we showed, you know, that was in fact painted as a comment on the way Holman Hunt felt the flock of God were being neglected in his day, as in Jesus' day. I mean, where was the spiritual leadership when Jesus arrived? Was it from kings? King Herod tried to have Jesus strangled at birth. Was it from the scribes? They call him a blasphemer. And most directly linked to our reading, look, this is very interesting, just literally before, here's some spiritual leaders in verse 34, the Pharisees saying, he casts out demons by the prince of demons. So not only had they completely failed to lead, bunch of self-focused hypocrites, suddenly here's the one person in the universe who can bind up, heal, direct people back to God, forgive. They say he's of the devil. I mean, some leadership leading away from the good shepherd. Morons, the Pharisees. Sorry if that's a bit rude. Actually, not true. They knew exactly what they were doing, but useless. Wait till you see Jesus let rip at them later in Matthew. For now, though, his vision is laser focused on the crowds. Sheep without a shepherd. Their sheep without a shepherd, and they were actually in Israel. They had the word of God. I take it as Jesus' mission expands to the nations. Sheep without a shepherd is an even more apt description of our crowds. I wonder how much you see the spiritual state of the people around you here in London. Picture Jesus shuffling onto a packed train with you. What does he see? As he moves up the escalator at Euston Station, you know, if you stand there first thing at the morning or at Warren Street, just this constant stream of people. What does Jesus see as he stands at your school gate, surveys your neighborhood? As the lift door opens, an office floor buzzing on a Monday morning, what's Jesus looking at? It's very hard, isn't it, to see people the way Jesus sees them. I guess, like me, you've got some people in your life who look quite fairly got together, clear in their direction. Others less so, but the more you get to know any of them, you realize this description is everyone in London without the Lord. Illness, fears, guilt issues, leadership. We've been led by the doctrines of secularism in the West for generations. Let's put us at the center. God at the side. That's increasingly become an individualistic thing. You do you. Not he made you. My body. Me deciding my identity. Me leading myself and writing the script for my own destiny. Do you know what? It's not just the self-centeredness of that that's wrong. It's too much for any human being to bear, being the center of their own universe. What a terrible burden we've been led into putting on ourselves, this independent life. And it's no surprising then that we have a culture of anxiety and stress, and despite all our advances, no answers to the problems of death and wickedness that Jesus confronts head on. Have you read the news this week? Harassed and helpless. And it would be so easy at this point to go on a bit of a rant about the failures of liberalism, capitalism, the latest celebrity scandal. Maybe you feel like ranting about someone in your life this week. They're so far from God. They're so annoying. Jesus does have a go at the leadership. He'll come back to them. But when he sees your friends, when he sees the crowds, how beautiful, how pastoral his response. When he saw the crowds, he said, "Godless lot, sooner they get harvested for judgment, the better." No, when he saw the crowds, compassion for them. Praise God for a Jesus who feels that way when he looks at lost people like us in here and them out there. You know, we're so busy, so much on our minds. If it all hinged on my compassion for the people out there, that would be no great hope. Thankfully, Jesus cares so much. And I get that at this point, some of our friends, and maybe you, if you're looking in on Christian things, would find that patronizing. You know, I don't really need to be shepherded, actually. Really? Think of Psalm 23, that most famous shepherd psalm. "The Lord's my shepherd, I'll not want." Just move the word "not." "The Lord's not my shepherd, I'll always be in want. I'll walk through the valley of death and I will fear no comfort for me. I haven't come to know mercy in the days of my life. And I shall not dwell in the house of the Lord forever." You know, so many that I know in central London, up at the rugby club yesterday, face value, clever, achieving, sporty. What a nightmare to be unshepherded through this life and beyond. A good shepherd doesn't want that. And hence point three, the problem and the plan. See, Jesus' compassion is way more than what you feel when you see a cute picture of a fluffy puppy on Instagram. His compassion actually leads him to do something. But the direction Jesus goes in here, I've found surprising on a number of levels. First, because he's the shepherd. Remember, predicted in the Christmas reading, Matthew 2, "He will shepherd my people." You might expect the shepherd king would simply carry on doing what he's been doing in more cities and villages. But now is not the time for that. Jesus wants to deploy his disciples. Verse 37, "Then he said to his disciples, 'The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few.'" It's the passage for country bumpkins, this one, isn't it? Here's another countryside image, harvest. The bit where they gather in the ripe stuff, just in case you're too city to know that. The food doesn't grow out the back of Tesco's in a bunch of tins. Jesus sees the crowds as sheep without a shepherd, and he sees them as a harvest, ready to be gathered back to God. My in-laws live in the countryside. It's great when you see it late summer, you know, just bulging it, just the wheat everywhere, just desperate for the laborers to get in amongst. Well, that's Jesus' perspective on the crowds. Needs people in amongst them to gather them back. And I think the way he puts it is surprising, because you might be thinking, well, the harvest is pretty minimal, to be honest, in my office. No one looking particularly ripe to be gathered to God. And the laborers, well, quite a lot of laborers at Euston Church, all these small group leaders, quite a few staff, a few keen personal evangelists, and same at all these other good London churches. Jesus sees the big picture, and he says it's always the other way around. Crowds of needy people ripe for the gospel, opportunity everywhere. This was just Israel, even more of a harvest as he ramps it up to the global level. Jesus says the biggest problem in mission to the nations is not lack of interest or the influence of Islam. The big problem in Christian mission isn't on the world side at all, actually. It's the workforce. Laborers are few. And this is the moment where I expect the application to be, see them with the eyes of Jesus, be a laborer, and let's go out there, guys, and gather them back to God. Reach, build, send, we say as our vision statement. Send out. It's even a phrase that's used in verse 38. How biblical are we? Well, it's where we're going to end up for sure. But verse 38 is actually very precise in its application. And it is the Lord's command. Pray earnestly to the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest. And that's just humbling, I think, to our ministry activism. These verses are so much more about him than us, his authority, his compassion, his harvest field. Hence our first task. Pray that he will do something. Do you have a heart for mission? Great. Get on your knees. Not much of a heart for the lost sheep. Don't worry. Don't examine your guts. This is not actually an application of try and be as compassionate as Jesus. My efforts to do that will be no great hope for anyone. The point is, listen to how he sees them and get on your knees accordingly. Maybe you're overwhelmed by the crowd. You know, it is so exciting to minister around here for us as a church. The nations are on these pavements. We're building bigger pavements because more of the nations are coming here all the time. Jesus can see past the smiles and the confident exteriors. Led so badly in many of the voices they're listening to. Jesus says, pray for workers who get in amongst them and gather them back to the good shepherd. Pray earnestly, seriously, committed, regular prayer for laborers. We'll need to have Jesus' perspective so clear if we're going to persevere in this. Sheep without a shepherd. A harvest ready to be brought in. So pray in the workers. And some of you do this. Thank you for those of you who pray for laborers for the harvest field here. It's personally a hard discipline I've found in the Christian life, committed prayer. Helps, though, when I'm told what to pray. Verse 38 is very specific. So I want to encourage you to maybe do a bit of a prayer walk. I don't mean a kind of organized formal thing. Just as you walk around this area, as I try to do, and you look up at UCL Mission Week next week, pray for laborers. UCH, the hospital, the welcome collection. We know that there's some Christians there. Help them be laborers, Lord. Same in HS2. You know, every building around here, it's like the size of those villages and towns Jesus was visiting. In the past, we sometimes at prayer nights facilitated, well, why don't you get together with the other teachers or medics or people in your postcode area or pray for French ministry. I'm sure we'll do that sort of thing again. But don't wait for it to be organized. In your small group, what about maybe once every now and then, just focus on one individual and the bit of the harvest field that they're in your prayer time. Pray for laborers. Or what about get together with, maybe you do this, the other Christians in your institution. Even just once a term with the other Christians on your street or the school that you're part of or your industry, your family. If you feel worried that you're the only Christian in the family, pray that God would bring more laborers into their life. Your nation, you know, there used to be a group that met here to pray for Malaysia. There was a bunch of folks from Malaysia, still are, and they used to meet just once a term and prayed for laborers for the harvest field back home. You get the point. It's not complicated, is it, at all? The challenge is all in the getting round to do it with this one. Verse 38 is one of those prayers that should come with a health warning, because the disciples who Jesus tells to pray for workers in verse 38, we'll see next week become the answer in the very next verse. Jesus sends them out. But before they or we roll up our sleeves to get picking the harvest, we're commanded to get on our knees and get praying.